שלום ליהודים, שלום לבני נוח, שלום לגויים. It's the evening of the fourth day, כף בחודש כסלב, פרשס וישב, תשעין וו, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 1 December 2015, webcasting from the rainy hills of Judea. We are once again at the Gush Etzion intersection at about 8 o'clock this morning, and Ishmael Klon, age 17, I think, just like Ishmael, tried to stab a Jew, but was shot dead by a Jew first. One of the many soldiers in full combat gear stationed all around that intersection now. Later in the morning, in the Shomron, another stabber, a female wild ass, was neutralized in her attempt. On Monday night, I think it was, in Jerusalem, on the Mount of Olives, a location of an Arab settlement called Ras al-Amud, there was a major riot of Molotov cocktails were thrown at police, and another 17-year-old Ishmaelite was shot dead in the act of throwing one. And on Sunday night, on Route 443, one of the two main roads in and out of Jerusalem from the coastal plain, several Israeli cars were perfectly targeted by rock-throwing Arabs. Ishmael did become a shooter when expelled from Father Abraham's tents, rocks that shattered their windshields. And there was also a report from there of laser beams directed at drivers, presumably like those sociopaths on the edges of airports in the States who have been known to direct their beams at pilots' eyes to blind them during landing. Yeah, sociopaths. It was just revealed today that 43 years ago, it was, I think, Joseph Romano, the weightlifter on the Israeli Olympic team. His parents came from Libya, by the way. When they were all taken hostage at the Olympic Village in Munich, by Fatah, pretending to be the unknown Black September, when tied up with the other athletes, Romano was castrated in front of them. The reality of our neighbors must be taken into account in our dealings with them, and I don't think we do that. These Arabs here harbor an ungodly number of sociopaths, who used to be called psychopaths, and I wish they still were. I have no hope for peace with them until Moshiach arrives. And all attempts at peace and a cooperative, friendly relationship until then are a cosmic waste of time. Ishmael was expelled from his father's community because his father's wise wife, Sarah, saw that Ishmael was capable, psychologically speaking, of murdering their son Isaac. And she was right. And this expulsion happened in the year 1713 BCE. That was 3,728 years ago. And I say peace with these people is impossible because obviously over the last 3,728 years, these people haven't changed. They're the same. For sure, there are good individuals among them, and some reliable experts claim many are opposed to this latest knife in the back technique, but of course, these good people say nothing. They're terrified, and that's because in addition to these good people, there is an ungodly percentage of homicidal maniacs. And worse, their government, like the populace, apparently, does not have the courage to go against the worst found in the Arab street. And that is a generous assessment, for on the surface, their leaders seem to be not afraid of them, but think like them. Take, for example, the video released today by PMW, showing Abbas on 16 November on PATV, describing the current fashion of Jew killing with kitchen knives and axes, whatever, as a peaceful uprising. More than a dozen Israelis at that moment had been murdered, 167 wounded, and this, he said, was a peaceful, popular uprising. He said he had long called for that. He is opposed, was opposed, to another violent intifada, and apparently he's satisfied that what's going on now deserves the title a peaceful, popular uprising. And not only that, he used the word aggression, but to describe the firing of bullets by Israelis. The Israelis are the aggressors here. And I say, with more conviction than ever, that no good can come from negotiating with this man. And from my own research into Arab culture, this is behavior possibly as old as Ishmael, 37 centuries ago. The aggressor is always the other guy, and you are always a defender. And as for Jews, they have no right to defend themselves and fight back. That is experienced in Arabic, as Jewish aggression, self-defense. Yesterday, Prime Minister Netanyahu was in Paris, and he passed this guy Abbas in the hall. They exchanged handshakes and smiles, and Bibi explained later that Israel must always be seen as ready for peace talks. But I wonder. J-Post hard copy today cited a paper delivered at the, or published at the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies, the think tank at Bar-Ilan, by Yaakov Amidrol, a former national security advisor, and before then, a career analyst in military intelligence, who advised that little can be done about these lone attackers. And he said the calls by some people for a replay of Operation Defensive Shield in 2002 when the IDF took back control of Judea and Samaria is meaningless in this context. And there are those who want to see house-to-house searches in Hebron. He says they're just uninformed, that's my word, when the weapons are kitchen knives, screwdrivers and the like. And he said that's 90% of the violence. That would be a pointless exercise. I agree, but I disagree that Israel can do nothing. He was right in saying, look at the big picture, which what is going on is not an existential threat, and compared to previous cycles of violence, what is happening now is minor. But again, I reject the idea that there is nothing we can do except defend ourselves. We can make the enemy pay for this behavior, and maybe even profit from it. I said in the past that we should deny all Jewish visits to the Temple Mount and tell the world that we are forced to do this because the Muslims are such conscienceless barbarians. But in response, we will consider Oslo a dead letter and feel no constraint when it comes to building wherever we want in this land. At the Gush intersection, army engineers are already, I think, creating a bypass road, and they plan to enforce a complete separation of the peoples, if possible. This was Israel's response to the first Intifada. I remember it well. Before 1996, Israelis driving back and forth between Hebron and the Gush and Jerusalem had to pass through Bethlehem and pass by the Dehaisha refugee slum, whose denizens, like today's, had no shortage of rock throwers, throwing rocks at our cars. The solution? The boring of two tunnels west of the old road and the creating of several kilometers of bypass road, still in use. Likewise, in Samaria, new roads just for Jews were built. Of course, over time, world anti-Jewry shrieked apartheid. With typical ignorance of the situation, none of them knew that for 20 years, Jews and Arabs used the same roads, no problem. It was only when, in 1988, that Arabs started their rock throwing at our cars, that Israel was forced to create separate roads for Jews, which makes of the charge apartheid not of this world. Apartheid skin color played no role in that engineering decision made in reaction to the serial attempts to murder Jews by these savages with no human empathy for Jews. And here we are more than a quarter century later, and the Arab mind remains unchanged. Here is not some marginal crackpot, but President Abbas, who sees a peaceful uprising in the flashing knives of his youth, and Israeli aggression in Jews using guns to stay alive. I would also like to see the Prime Minister profit from this situation by demanding that Abbas publicly on PATV declare that the current attacks by his boys should stop, declare that no one has the right to murder Jews like this. And until he makes such a speech, Israel owes him nothing. As always, yours truly wants to see a very different public diplomacy in which we declare our right to be the sovereign owners of Judea and Samaria. I was at the wall the other day and saw a tourist reading a tourist guide and noticed the title on the cover, which was Israel and the Palestinian Territories. I wanted to know who published this book, and he showed me it's the Lonely Planet people. Someday, God willing, official Israel will wake up to this classic, almost Nazi-like anti-Semitism at work here. In Auschwitz, the Nazis deprived Jews of their names and literally burned serial numbers into their arms as if they were inanimate objects or animals, cattle, diseased, who were being registered for destruction. And here, the world no longer knows the names Judea and Samaria. And the reason for that is Israel's stiff-necked refusal to proudly claim Judea and Samaria under their rightful names, and to raise Cain about being denied the real estate whence cometh the word Jew, and was the center of our people's historic existence here. Israel could make it a regulation that all foreign journalists have to use the terms Judea and Samaria, or be denied accreditation, which affords these journalists certain privileges and government assistance in their work. Israelis have to wake up.
Amen.
And that's from the book of Ruth, chapter 1, the middle of verse 16 to its end. Well, last webcast I talked of cooperation between Israel and Russia in the skies over Syria. Amos Gilad, another former national security advisor, said things were going smoothly and there was no room for concern of a repeat of the Turkish downing of a Russian plane between us and Russia. And then yesterday in Paris, the Prime Minister met with the current Russian Tsar, Vladimir Putin, and Netanyahu said afterwards they spoke of even deeper security cooperation. Indeed, yesterday Israeli and Russian military officers were scheduled to meet. Bibi also spoke of the threat to both Russia and Israel from extremist Islam, in his words. It's, in his words, brutality and barbarism. It was also reported that Putin began their meeting by saying Happy Hanukkah and then praised Bibi for his recent visit to Moscow, where he presented his plan for cooperation that is working so well. Afterwards, as mentioned before, Bibi said he wanted to keep up appearances via that smile and handshake with Obama. He said he still, though, has no illusions about the man. He has to stop the incitement and lying about the Temple Mount. Yeah, we need more of this talk from him. He also said Arab leaders approached him respectfully, and in fact, it was just announced last week that Israel is opening a commercial office in Dubai, I think it was. I think it's part of the tectonic shift in the entire region occasioned by Ayatollah Barack Hussein's fondness for Iran that is driving the Arabs toward a more friendly attitude towards Israel out of necessity. An op-ed in a Kuwaiti newspaper last week spoke the truth in saying Israel is not the Arabs' enemy. In Paris, though, yesterday, the Israeli delegation chose not to attend the speech delivered by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, apparently forewarned that he was going to say, quote, "There is no cause that can justify the recent terrorist violence in Paris, in Beirut, Baghdad, Tunis, and every place else," close quote. Right, Israel was not mentioned by him, which fits right into what I spoke about last webcast, the ironclad law in the United Nations organization, according to which, unique on the planet, what is terrorism all over the world when perpetrated in Israel against Jews is not terrorism. It's freedom fighting. And thus is the flame of age-old violence against Jews kept alive. So long as the Jewish people exist, much of the world will treat this people differently and even sanctify killing us in a noble cause, such as a war of national independence. In every generation, there are good reasons to hate and kill Jews. In our generation, it's Palestinian nationalism, which is the struggle of a small third world people whose entire ancient homeland was stolen by imperialist racist Zionists. Just like the Belgians who ruled in the Congo and the French who ruled in North Africa, three different countries there, and even more in sub-Saharan black Africa, like the British in Kenya and southern Africa. Israel is the latest of the racist European colonial aggressions against the Third World. And never mind that the history of Zionism bears no resemblance whatsoever to the history of European colonialism. The Jewish religion, in one sense, is a theory of human history over which the Holy One, blessed be He, is in charge. And in this light, we may frame the current tidal wave of Muslims pouring into Europe, so many of them via Turkey, for Europe's monumental destruction of a third of European Jewry. It's now being literally invaded by Muslims, bent on destroying Europe from within. J-Post hard copy this morning reported that the EU is trying to bribe Turkey into shutting down this invasion. The EU hopes to sign an agreement this coming Sunday in Brussels with Turkey that will pay them 3 billion euros to cut off the flow. In addition, the EU will relent from some of its demands made of Turkey for years for reform as a condition of entry into the EU. There are some 2.2 million Syrian refugees sheltering in Turkey today, and from this pool, so many of the so-called refugees are coming. Turkey has the ability to shut down this traffic. The EU also wants Turkey to block, in particular, Afghans in this stream of mostly young military-age men. In this regard, there was good news here this morning from the states in the matter of state governors standing up to the Ayatollah in the Oval Office, who remains determined to proceed with his Islamization of America. Maybe you saw that edited video of His Excellency Barack Hussein repeating the expression, "It is not who we are," 46 times in order to justify his Islamification program under the camouflage of compassion for refugees. And maybe you saw today how this master con man addressed the global warming conference in Paris, linking climate change with terrorism as joint security threats. And I think he even threw in the triple homicide in Colorado Springs at Planned Parenthood last Friday. I still hold to my belief that Obama's crusade for climate change, or against it, is nothing but a distraction, a variation on calling Fort Hood workplace violence. Since when has this guy been known as such a nature boy? A member of the Sierra Club, perhaps? A lover of the outdoors who weeps over the destruction of the environment? Since when has he been such an expert on meteorology? His claim that climate change is a threat on a par with terrorism by extremists, whose ideology he cannot name, is the same tactic. Islamize America and get the people to look the other way.
Shmoo.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. On the home front, in addition to the two failed Jew-killing attempts today, a top story was the miserable decision, and hardly its first, by the High Court not to demolish the home of a Jew-killer who last year stabbed a soldier to death outside Tel Aviv's Haganah Railroad Station, a 20-year-old Almog Shiloni, Hashem Yikom Domo. His brother and other family members are sick with anger at the court, whose decision was once again these judges second-guessing the army and the GSS, who know these Arabs best. Two of the three judge panel, Mani Mazuz, a known leftist former attorney general, and Eli Rubinstein, a known spineless liberal, said too much time had passed, 11 months since the murder, to justify demolishing this home as a deterrent, again exercising their judgment in defense matters that overrides others in the security agencies who know better. I also sense a continuing confusion in the minds of these high court judges between civil and criminal proceedings whose defendants are citizens and these Arabs who live under martial law. In my book, I point out how in Algeria, just like here, the Muslims confuse the civilized by committing acts of war against them but then demanding to be treated like citizens in peacetime, charged with a crime in a civilized society. I point out how the French, like Israelis later in the 1970s, thought they could improve the lives of the Muslims and make them grateful and therefore less hostile. The French army was used to build more schools and help villages improve their sanitation collection, as if the locals cared about either. What stands out is this using of soldiers as construction workers and sanitation engineers. That's a big mistake. The principal job of a soldier is to kill enemy soldiers. And when he is tasked with these other public works projects in the hope of changing hearts and minds, he's being misused. And the nation that employs him in these tasks is only fooling and harming itself. That is maybe one positive side of the current knife intifada, as they're calling it. Everyone knows the task at hand is not arresting the attacked. The attacker, so that he can then be put on trial and provided with a lawyer. No, the right thing to do is to kill him on the spot. And B'Tselem is already complaining about these field executions. Yaakov Amidor is right about the difficulty of dealing with the current style of Jew-killing attempts, which is very different from what was going on a decade ago. And it's not an imminent security crisis for the whole country, but it is having a major impact on the lives of Jews in Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria. The government has just budgeted a $100 million shekel assistance program to Jerusalem's businesses impacted by the violence, you know, the shopkeepers and the cafe owners and others depending upon drop-in traffic. In the Gush, the two major restaurants are functionally inert. One of them, one of the best restaurants in Israel, Gavna, friends of mine, and they now have shut their doors and must find other employment until the situation reverts to what it was. The 30,000 or so, I think, residents in the 14 communities in the Gush, which are in the block, BLOC, which is what Gush means, are afraid to go out. The central Rami Levy discount supermarket's daily revenue must be down by 90% during the week, if not before Shabbos. One imagines people who work in Jerusalem are doing more of their shopping there rather than at the Gush. Well, to end on a better note, while there were rumors last week of Netanyahu wanting to hand over land to Abbas, he has made clear that he will not hand over one square meter so long as this violence persists, which it could for years to come. Okay, that's it for this Tuesday night, the second night of the week for us. I'll be back, God willing, on Thursday. Until then, Laila Tov, Meretz Yisrael.